about your opinion? I mean, what is your understanding? So you can, like this way we can actually have say kind of an interactive session. So Vedic philosophy generally deals with three principles: living entity, supreme personality of Godhead, and nature. Now Bhagavad Gita has two other aspects included in that, and they are time and karma. Kala and karma. And then Bhagavad Gita is describing that the living entities who actually come from the spiritual sky, they get entangled in the material nature. And this material nature is like a prison house. And just as a prisoner, due to his crime, is subjected to punishments in a prison, the living entities are suffering in this material nature. And there are three types of sufferings, and everyone in this material nature is subjected to these three types of sufferings. One suffering is caused by ourselves. Another kind of suffering, which is inflicted upon us by the other living entities. And another kind of suffering is suffering caused by nature. So first is our selves are the cause of suffering, suffering caused by the body and the mind. Suffering caused, the next one is suffering caused by our living entities around us. And the other one is suffering caused by the material nature. Now, should we discuss about these topics, these basic things about? Okay, well, first I'll ask Mother Krishna Priya to open the discussion, and maybe you can elaborate any one aspect of this suffering.
Nobody in this world wants suffering. Everyone is wanting to be happy, and in different ways in searching after Ananda or happiness. And yet, we find that one of these threefold miseries, which is the thankless tax of the external energy, Mahamaya, is always attacking us in some different way. So just like, for instance, we could think, I'm going to go to a very beautiful place, I'm going to sit down and very peacefully meditate and not have any disturbance, and then we can be there and some big red ants can come and start biting us. And so that's other than the entity, the ants invite us. Then we're trying to sit there and be very peaceful. And some mosquitoes can come and bite us. And then if it's in the 21st become enchanted, and they're drinking and playing loud music, and they can disturb us. So somehow or other, the material energy is set up in such a way that if we try to make some arrangements on our own, that there's always some catch-22, there's always some other living entity that can cause disturbance.
Yeah, so this is in which category?
It's the category of the entity.
Yeah, the adhi bhauti. The suffering caused by other living entities. Actually, we can think of so many different, you know, examples like that. And when you're talking about this, I was just it occurred to me of one incident. Like, just consider John F. Kennedy, President of the United States, in a sunny morning in Dallas, Texas, driving down, his wife surrounded by his entourage and escorted. And all of a sudden, you know, she gets hit by a bullet. Not one bullet actually, many bullets. And just consider, all of us, I mean, you know, the most exalted position you can think of, you know, in this planet. The President of the United States, very popular, handsome, young, powerful. What happened to all his happiness? Him and his whole family is just plunged into such a misery and miserable condition. So this is the material nature. Another way you can think of, you know, Richard Nixon, another President of the United States, such a powerful person, and may not be as popular as JFK, but still, in spite of his unpopularity, he was holding a very big position. And then this Watergate scandal just gets, you know, exposed and, you know, stripped of his power and position. So this is what the material nature is like. Now who will speak next? Uttara?
So I was just thinking about how in different times in my devotional service, something external will come and I'll think that, oh, if that was just taken care of, like doing sankirtan at 110 degrees in the shade and thinking, I would, you know, if it was just so much, if that would be removed, I could do so much more service. And then a week later, the temperature goes down, but then my mind creates so much difficulties and challenges. And it's happened like in many ways that over the years. And I think it's easier to deal with the external ones. The mind seems a little bit more challenging to quiet and to deal with, but the suffering from the material nature easier to separate.
Yeah.
And it's harder to separate ourselves, like, at least for myself, from when the suffering comes from the mind or other living entities. But it's more challenging, especially when you associate with Vaishnava being the only offensive, so it can be more, whereas if it's, you know, the weather, you just, whatever, you have to wait for it to change, and you can't control it, and you know you can't control it.
Right.
And so you have to surrender just to whatever is happening. But somehow or other, I feel like it's a little more challenging when it's the mind or other situations. And so always stay focused, but no, in Krishna.
So this is which category?
the suffering from the mind is more challenging.
Yeah, adhyatmik, from body and mind. Not about Prabhu, you wanted to.
I was just thinking about not too many years, a couple of years ago, we were all the world was hit by tsunami. And the most beautiful place is considered Phuket for the Western world, Thailand. And people were very, very hard, such as a dream to go to Thailand and enjoy this beautiful beach, this beautiful country and everything, and saving so much money and planning this and dreaming for the most happiest moment of their life. And they were all there at this place of happiness, the beach, the ocean, the white sand, the coconut trees, and everything, the hotel. And just like that, they were gone. So much pain. So, and I would just brush a little bit of Mauritius same thing sometimes. People work very hard in Europe to go to Mauritius. And Mauritius being tropical, we may have 5 days of rain non-stop, and some people only come for 5 days and they don't enjoy it. In the category of Adi Bhaktik, Adi Bhaktik.
Mm. Sankirtan?
I was thinking we're going to talk about how we all have needs and how Krishna's need is to connect with all the entities. And then I was also really liking the class that you gave at Richard Chapman's house in Boston, and how you were saying how about how Krishna is like the father, and how the father never gives up the son, but sometimes the son will turn his back on the father, but then the father is always willing to take back the son and only willing to provide the inner life.
Very good. This is living entity's relationship with Krishna. Living jiva and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Father. And he is taking care of all the living entities because they are his part and parcel. Very good. Thank you. Archana?
I just spent 2 months in the Caribbean, and of course everyone thinking of the Caribbean thing of like paradise. You see, everyone just being like the simple, everyone being just be able to go there and for vacation. And we had this year we had like more than 5 weeks. The country was completely on strike, like everything was closed. You couldn't go and buy the food. That was all going on after 10 p.m. for like very dangerous situation. And I think any time, any comfortable situation can become the most dangerous or horrible things. So everything is so temporary in this world. So the only thing is we should, the only shelter we have is.
Thank you. Would you like to say? Take on I forgot your name.
Jagat Guru.
Jagat Guru Prabhu, yeah. Jagat Guru Prabhu.
Well, there's so many diseases. Paranoid schizophrenia. There's depression. Obsessive compulsive. There's personality disorders like borderline. And there's dependent personality disorders. And interesting thing is that some psychologists say that under stress, any one of us will manifest one of these disorders. So every one of us has a tendency towards one of them. And under stress, it'll manifest. And so this is the miseries of the mind. You imagine how much suffering that paranoid schizophrenia is when you think that people are after you.
Chandrasekhar, why all this suffering? Why are all these suffering? Yeah, so elaborate on that.
In her natural position, the soul is just going to experience no suffering, rather. The soul experiences unending happiness and unending knowledge. Such an ananda. But when the living entity rejects his real identity and out of sheer stupidity surrenders to stupidity, the poem by Dravida Prabhu, he loses all sagacity and with it all capacity to understand reality or check his sensuality. Abandoning humility, he touts his own ability, forgetting his fragility and fortune's volatility. Absorbed in asininity for what seems an infinity of lives devoid of piety, he suffers in anxiety. Until contact with God's devotee, perhaps of utmost brevity, awakens his affinity for words of the divinity. Perceiving the futility of all his imbecility, the soul regains his sanity and casts away his vanity. In the niche humility, he serves with all sincerity and growing spontaneity his guru and the deity. Regaining his identity, the wayward living entity returns to the fraternity of Krishna for eternity.
So Josh, maybe you can elaborate on how a living entity turns, how and when a living entity turns towards Krishna.
How and when? I would say that the first step would be familiarity, since in the present 5,000 years of the Kali Yuga. Great rise in irreligiosity, and most people have never heard the name of Krishna or seen the name of Krishna. So when one is introduced, it rekindles the
how one gets introduced
through a devotee who's spreading the holy name.
So that's the first consideration. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, carry on.
I was introduced to a book. Somebody sold me a book. One develops a taste for Krishna. One can gradually move oneself out of the.
Very good. Maybe you can elaborate on that. How you become a devotee?
How I became a devotee. Somebody sold me a book. I was in a mall and they reached around and they put a copy of the Sri Yukteswara and said, "Are you interested in spirituality?" And I saw Maha Vishnu's form. Who is that? And so he said, "This is a very important book for you." I only have $3 and I have to go buy a hamburger, so I can't. And he says, "This is much more important." So I said, "Okay, I'll buy a book." And I bought the book and I read it, and I immediately conceived that the Vedic was superior to what I had been given. And I attempted spiritual life. But fell out of spiritual life. Years passed, and I attempted again, and also came under Maya, and that was 9 years ago. And 9 years passed, and I suffered and got older, and then got married, did various things, and then eventually I was brought back into. Krishna consciousness by his mercy only.
Mm-hmm. Very thing. So how, what made you come back? Like,
various things, but one thing that was interesting is that in discussions with people about philosophy and politics and civilization, I hear all sorts of things, and even though I wasn't a devotee, I still believed that the Vedic was superior. So I found myself defending. I found myself defending India to people, and I became more and more interested. And I told my wife that I used to be a brahmachari for a brief period of time, and she started cooking Indian food, and more we got.
Oh, I see. You lived in a temple.
I live in South Tampa, but we're visiting.
Okay.
We're visiting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were just accepted as aspiring disciples of Pure Krishna Maharaj yesterday. So.
Mm. Very good. Very good. Rishikesh, what would you like to elaborate on?
Whatever you say.
No, I'm giving a choice to everybody. Would you like, a few topics I gave, so you take any of these topics.
I was just want to continue with the discussion with Chandrasekhar Babu, saying how does the suffering come from. I had a very nice class by Dhan Maharaj in Manapur. So he was giving a graphical presentation of where the actual thing comes. Basically, first is avidya, ignorance of the spirituality of Krishna consciousness. Under ignorance, we do a karma. And that creates the reactions, good or bad. And that basically the reaction causes suffering. So that's how the progression is. The root cause is the avidya. That's what he was saying.
How does one get into avidya?
Obviously aversion to Krishna. that's the root cause. Envious to Krishna.
Good. Mankur Bihari.
This Adi Devi, Adi Bhautik and Adhyatmik, all this leads to suffering. And that reminds me that when a person gets married, in the beginning, like he has an engagement, so he has an engagement ring. Then when he gets married, he gets exchange of marriage ring, and afterwards he gets into suffering.
Krishna does.
I was thinking more how the mind can be a cause of one's miseries through our mental thoughts. Sometimes we attain what we try to enjoy so much things, and in the process of doing that, if we fail, then we get frustrated. A lot of time, obviously, we cannot achieve what we want. The mind has so much desires, material desires, and in the process of when one tries to accomplish it, one has put so much inconveniences and obstacles. And in the end of it, still, you cannot accomplish it. And how the mind is so tricky. That kind of reminds me how Krishna says the mind can be your best friend and the mind can be your enemy. And a lot of time, at least for me anyway, that the mind is obviously my enemy.
Often what happens? Mind, what does it do?
For me, at least anyway, a lot of time, the mind seems to be my enemy. Because
okay.
The mind's always thinking desiring this, desiring that. How it has caused me so much stress and anxiety and suffering. How I was just thinking about the mind.
Shyamagauri, would you like to elaborate some?
I'm thinking that we have two people in the years from us. So when we look at us, those of us here and the other Vaishnavas in the world, we have at least got this knowledge and at least open our eyes. But when I look outside, there are millions and millions of entities. We are beginning from plants and small bugs. And I wonder when these entities will get this mortal. And when you say causeless, and when I put in a situation and I look back and say, I got this mortal, I really don't understand what that causeless is. It's so hard. I mean, I can imagine bigger.
Yeah, so do you feel that they are in a miserable situation? Do you feel their suffering and misery?
Yes, from my point of view, from where I'm standing, I can see their suffering. But I know in their situation, they're able to purchase.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is actually that you are seeing their suffering condition, but they are not aware of that. Now, what are you going to do about it? Did you ever contemplate on that? What did you decide? Huh? Did you discuss it with Rishikesh? Yeah, good. Bring them to a temple, give them prasad. Main thing is befriend them. You know? Like, you see, we may not be able to do for the whole, you know, for the entire mankind, the entire world. But at least, you know, you can start off with those who are around you. You're in your workplace,
yes.
The people, those who are close to you. And, you know, like, you may see their miserable condition, but they are not aware of it. They think that, you know, they are not really even considering that option. But the thing is, a time will come, at some point, you know, they'll be miserable. And that's the time, you know, we have to be there for them. Like, we develop friendship, but then, you know, who is a friend? A friend in need is a friend indeed. So at the time of distress, you know, like, you know, we can give them this alternative, or which comes in the form of awareness, as Rishikesh was saying. Maybe that one I would have let him to elaborate on that also. Like, what is actually avidya? What is avidya? The simple translation of the expression avidya will be ignorance. And this is what ignorance is. Like, we are suffering, but we don't know that we are suffering. We are in a miserable situation, but we are thinking that we'll be able to enjoy. This is ignorance. And this ignorance is actually the cause of our suffering. Now, if we want to, you know, if we want to solve that suffering condition, if we want to rectify the suffering condition, if we want to situate ourselves in a condition free from suffering, then we have to know what is the cause of suffering and what's the way out of the suffering. And, you know, as we were saying, like, you are fortunate because you found it. You have become aware of it. You have been able to remove your avidya, remove your ignorance. And now we have to create that good fortune for others as well. And it will happen. You know, straight away they may not accept it. But if sometime, when they are in difficulties, and if we can give it to them, yes, then they will see the value of it. Like a simple example is, you know, like, when someone is enjoying, you can see that they are not open to listen to you. But when someone is, you know, some close one, some dear one dies, when his heart is completely afflicted with agony, and then if you remind him, he'll be more receptive, more open to hear.
I always wondered, but he said somebody came from behind and gave him a book, and he was going to buy a hamburger, but he didn't take any effort, so much effort to accept it.
Yeah.
There are some people who be ready to something to do
with
worth it.
Yeah, that is true. Like, you know, some people is, let's put it this way, some will be more receptive, some will not be. And some will be receptive at some point, and in some other point he won't be receptive. Or rather put it this way, somebody may not have been receptive, but at some point he will become receptive. right? Like, I mean, I can speak for myself, you know. Like, I came across the devotees in 1970 in Germany. But to tell you frankly, I got so kind of, I'll say, negative about them, that if I saw the devotees in this side of the road, I would go from the other side. Like, I would just, you know, avoid them. So, naturally, at that time, you know, I was not receptive. But, you know, there was a need. I mean, but then, when it happened just like a flash. The first page of Nectar of Devotion. It just dawned in me that this is what I was looking for. And that was in 1976, 6 years after. I had to wait for 6 long years to come to that point. You know. It doesn't matter when it will happen, but on our part we should be, like, we should also be sensitive, you know. Like, in 1970, I was going to the temple, and it was in Hamburg, and I used to go to the temple, and I was friendly with the devotees, and I used to appreciate what they were doing. And one day, you know, like, I was having a very nice discussion with one devotee, one American devotee. And another American devotee, he just could not probably accepted that, you know, I was doing most of the talking and the other devotee was just listening. So he just, you know, from nowhere, from no rhyme or reason, he just started to say something. You know, for no rhyme or reason, actually. I was not talking about Buddha. I was not talking about Ramakrishna. And from nowhere he just comes and he just says, Buddha was a cheat and Ramakrishna was a swindler. And the next thing, I just got up, put on my shoes, and that was the last day I went to the temple. Now, so we have to be sensitive about how we deal with people. Like, I mean, you know, our impressions, the impressions that we create on others goes a long way. If we create a negative impression, you know, like, probably we are doing some harm to the movement, like not allowing a person to come in. He may have been ready to come. So, but you know, sometimes we fail to understand that. But then again, we also have to, I have seen also, like, how some devotees became a devotee. Like, in that respect, I just remember one incident. That was in Kumbh Mela in 77, Allahabad. Prabhupada was giving darshan in the evening. Hundreds of people used to come to, because Kumbh Mela, you know, thousands, maybe millions of people. You know. And that tent used to be packed, and Prabhupada used to give darshan, and Prabhupada used to, you know, people used to ask questions. Now here is one Bengali sadhu, you know, he belongs to Bharat Sevashram Sangha, I don't know whether you know it. And he asked Prabhupada some question in Bengali. The main question was pertaining to, you know, social work, like, you know, and Prabhupada was answering him in Hindi. I could understand why Prabhupada was answering in Hindi, because most of the people around there were Hindi speaking. And, you know, like, Prabhupada, this person was asking, and Prabhupada was very heavy. Prabhupada was very, very heavy with him. And I was just a new devotee, you know. Like, and I was thinking that this person will never become a devotee. That the way Prabhupada blasted him, you know, he probably never come near us again. But then, you know, after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, you know, I after Kumbh Mela, I was with Prabhupada practically all the time. And then, you know, after Prabhupada left, I went back to Mayapur. And then one day I saw that person, you know, he became a devotee. Like, there is no way of knowing how and when one can become a devotee, you know, like, the way Prabhupada was heavy with him, you know, like, you know, I felt that he would never come anywhere near this continent, future. But he did. Only misfortune for him is that he couldn't join when Prabhupada was there and, you know, have Prabhupada's mercy. Therefore, you know, when we approach a sadhu, we should also be careful how we approach him. And on our part also, we should be a little sensitive how we deal with others. And sometimes I feel that, you know, like I sometimes, you know, during question-answer session, sometimes I become very abrupt and a little heavy also. But then later on I feel bad that, oh, that person is so new, probably I shouldn't have been so heavy with him and should have been a little more tolerant and gentle. Yeah, thank you. Eva?
On the subject of suffering, if one person is terminally ill and he or she chooses to end his or her life, what do you say to these people?
Huh?
What do you say to them?
Well, I mean, there is no need to artificially prolong the life. Nowadays what's happening, you know, like, a person is meant to die, right? What I mean is, they say the person is meant to die, but, you know, they are artificially prolonging that life. You know, by, you know, sort of artificial heart pumping and this arrangement, that arrangement. The guy is in coma. You know, he doesn't know what's happening. And, you know, like, they are just trying to prolong his life, you know. In a situation like that, you know, I would say it's not necessary. Let one die. Like, when death comes, let one die. Okay, now to go back to your point, like, if one is suffering, then, you know, like, and, you know, the suffering is there, and if one feels that, well, I mean, if I died, then the suffering would have been reduced, or I would have been free from that suffering. I don't know whether anyone really feels that way. Like, when anyone seriously thinks or feels that way, that, let me die. Rather, no matter how much the suffering is, the tendency is actually to think that, let me have some painkiller. Let me have some morphine to reduce the pain. One doesn't think, you know, like, let me die. Right? Or They don't say, tell the doctor, I'm suffering, so please finish me off. One doesn't think that way. Generally, I'm talking about. Rather, their tendency is to please reduce the pain. You know why? Because in most cases, people do not have any understanding about their existence beyond death. That's why no one, no matter how much they're suffering, they don't want to die. Like in that respect, Prabhupada gives a, you know, spoke that the person is suffering in a terrible, he's in a miserable condition. And you ask him, how are you feeling today? He says, a little better. Or I'm all right. Actually, all of us are suffering. All of us are suffering constantly. But first of all, we don't realize that we are suffering. And or we feel that maybe now I am suffering, but tomorrow it will be better. No one thinks in terms of, you know, like, people in general do not think that, oh, let me finish myself off of this suffering. It happens, some people do commit suicide, but that's, committing suicide is an unusual phenomenon. In most cases you'll find people want to continue to live, irrespective of their suffering condition. Actually, we are constantly suffering. Constantly, but we don't realize we are suffering. You know, everything is suffering. Digesting food also is suffering. Right? Breathing is suffering. Right? For the heart to pump blood is suffering. So everything that we are going through is suffering. But we are not aware of it. Similarly, a person lying in a deathbed, you know, suffering. He thinks, he doesn't think that he is suffering. Or if he feels that if there is suffering, there is a way to mitigate that suffering. Now please give me some medicine, give me this, give me that. That's the reality. And that is the meaning of being conditioned. Condition means, you know, like being in a... adjusting whatever situation you are in. People adjust. You are in the middle of Indian summer, you adjust. You are in the middle of New York's winter, you adjust. Not New York winter is not that bad. You are in the middle of Alaskan winter. Still you adjust yourself. So that is the meaning of conditioning. But first I told you about that, you know, like there is this expression, mercy killing. That means take off that, those artificial arrangements that he's made. Let him leave his body. So yeah, that, I mean, personally, in that case, I will say, don't prolong the life. Like, he's going to get another body. So why, you know, why make him continue to be in this body? It's like, you know, the house has fallen apart. House is falling apart. The sewage system doesn't work. The plumbing system doesn't work. Heating system doesn't work. The roof is... collapsing, and when it rains, you know, like you get drenched, and the government officials gives you the notice that please vacate from your house, and there is another house meant for you, is ready for you. But somebody comes and says, no, don't leave this house, just keep on staying here. Is it an intelligent proposal to continue to stay in a dilapidated house when a new house is waiting? So, as a devotee, we understand that. Others don't, because they think this is the only house I have. They don't have any information that about the new house that's waiting. So that's why devotees are in a different situation. And that's why devotees are afraid of dying. Why unnecessarily prolong life in this body? If there is a better option open. If your car is broken down, doesn't run properly, every week you have to take it to a garage, and somebody gives you a proposal that, okay, dump that car and there's a new car for you, what will be a natural response? Oh, fine, let me get the new car, you know, why should I, you know, suffer in this car? Would you like to say something about your experience?
Well, on suffering, I see so many people that are desperate. They're desperately clinging to the suffering, you know, in a sense. They're looking for relief and satisfaction, and they can't achieve it. So it's constantly, oh, this car is no good, or oh, I need another painkiller. Constantly thinking, oh, I don't have the house that I want. So they think on their suffering. But it's not such unimportant suffering, it's such minor things.
Yeah, they're continuing because they don't know that there is a better option open to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
But now if you know that there is an option open, what will you do?
They need to be introduced to a better option.
Yeah, right.
Because Krishna is very attractive. Even people don't realize he's attractive immediately. They can find different ways to find him attractive. They need to find the right timing, the right method of being presented sometimes. And they can realize that car or that painkiller isn't going to give you relief or satisfaction in the long run. You've got to move on from that. You've got to quit clinging to that. Because it's so desperate and they exhaust themselves. They shouldn't exhaust themselves. They, oh, I'm working so hard to make so much money. Or, my head's constantly hurting. You don't have to think about how much your head hurts. You don't have to think about how much money you have to bring in to buy this, that, the other. That's not what you have to wear yourself out over, you know. Just calm down, you need to calm down a little bit and see there's a better option. I feel so bad, I see some people so unhappy, I'd like to see them. Season happy, because I was always very cynical. It's like, oh, nothing's ever going to make me happy. Nothing is worth anything. It all leads to misery. It all leads to unhappiness. It's all pointless. That's how I felt for a very long time.
And now you're happy.
Yes, I'm rich. Very good. Yeah, I have a purpose. I have a real purpose.
And Josh gives the credit for that.
And immediately, it was immediately attractive, and over time it becomes more and more attractive. And
very good.
It makes sense. It's the thing, you know, it makes perfect sense.
Yes.
And I think people want something that makes sense.
Yeah. You're fortunate because you got the better option.
Mm-hmm.
Open.
And it's sad because what they're looking for doesn't make sense.
Right.
So they keep looking. And
so that's why you have to go and tell them, remind them about the better option.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to. I feel bad if I didn't, because I feel so bad saying them, so miserable.
Right. Yeah. Good. What's your name?
Julian.
Mm-hmm. Very good, Julian. Hare Krishna. Thank you. What's your name? I forgot. Katie. Mm-hmm. K-E-D-Y?
K-H-E-I-E.
Oh, Katie. Oh, Katie. Catherine. Is it? Just kidding. Okay. So, Katie, maybe you can tell us how you became attracted to Krishna.
Sure. I met Madhava in his store. And him and me and my dad became friends. And he took us to the temple. And I immediately liked the kirtan. I thought it was so powerful and energetic. And I seen the being. So I kept going with that. And then one day, I didn't know much about the knowledge or the philosophy of it. I just liked going. But one day I was particularly late. lamenting over everything. And I didn't even go into the temple room, and I was sitting at the banquet table just floating like life. And a devotee came and sat beside me, and all of a sudden she started talking to me, and it was just so strange. Like, she ran to her house and got me books, and whenever I was getting me different books, and I read them, and ever since then, I really just had her.
Which book was it? And how long ago was that?
3 years.
3 years. And since then you're coming every week?
Yeah.
At least. Okay. And are you chanting Hare Krishna?
Yeah.
How many rounds do you chant?
Not many. Like,
at least two. At least two. That's very nice. You chant every day at least two.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. And do you intend to increase your chanting?
Oh, yeah. I do intend.
When?
As soon as possible. I really want to.
As soon as possible means now. Right? Okay, maybe from tomorrow.
Yeah.
And are you regularly reading Prabhupada's books?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And do you have a Bhagavad Gita?
Yes,
okay. Do you read Bhagavad Gita every day?
Yeah,
okay.
My
okay. Your father also is
reading?
And does he come to your temple?
Every now and then.
Every now and then. What does he do?
He's a crane operator.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. And very good. Do you like the prasad? Do you like food? Yeah. And do you like the devotees? Yeah, very good. Very good. Yes. So take this opportunity very seriously and take full advantage of it. Do you realize the fact that you are a spiritual, you are a spiritual being?
I don't know if I realize that.
Like, okay, if I ask you, Keti, who are you? What will be your answer? Let's put it this way. Say, when you are 5 years old, you are Kitty, right? And when you are 10 years old, you are also Kitty. And you today? You are still the Kitty, right? But your body changed. Your 5 year old body was different from 10 year old body, and today's body is different from when you're 10, right?
Yeah.
So you, in spite of changing of your body, you are the same person. You're same, still the same Kitty. So who is Kitty? Okay. At least you can understand that you are not the body, because the body changed, but you are still the same. And someday when you, you know, grow even older, this body also won't be there. The body will change. But you will still be the same person. So who is that person?
There's a person.
Yeah. Or before we go to that, we say that you are the one who is keeping your body alive, right? Like all of us, it is our we that is keeping this body alive. When you leave this body, the body will become dead, right? Now who is that that makes this body alive? So now you understand that you are a spirit soul? Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, so, you know, like it needs certain practice, and that practice is, you know, one of the practices, chanting Hare Krishna. Another practice is reading Prabhupada's books. Another practice is eating Krishna Prasad. So another practice is we associate with the devotees. So this is how, you know, if you practice this continuously, then this practice will bring you to the platform of realizing that you are spirit. Yes. So continue with this practice. Okay. Thank you, Keti. Hare Krishna. Now, Sharanagati, how are you going to conclude? All that we discussed.
Well, the time that I recall, which relates to everybody, but at that time I was not a devotee. However, when I think about it, I think it was, but I don't even think I deserve to be a devotee. But the day was, we were in the church, and then St. Bartholomew's in the church, preparing for a prayer service for the weekend. It's usually on the 11th of September, and or the second Tuesday of the month. And to prepare for the opening of the General Assembly of the UN. So all these different spiritual leaders came to say a prayer for the new session of the UN. And that was the day that the Twin Towers were finished. So while in the midst of the prayer, there's reporting that one of the towers just collapsed, and maybe the next one is going to too. And the first thing that came to my mind is that, well, there must be someone who is protecting us, but I must go home because I had, you know, to make sure that everything was all right. And I was told that we had to get vaccinated. So on this particular morning, there was a woman who was a friend of mine. And I wanted, and as I say, I didn't know, and I never met anybody before, but I was just thinking about the course of this journey that I went on, that makes me feel as if, in here, I feel that there is a, you know, that all these living entities were not only suffering, but they were being destroyed. People were being going through suffering, worrying about people. And my first inclination was to go out and help. But the first thing was to evacuate from where I lived and make sure everything was, you know, okay. And this person who had flown in from Florida said she was staying at the hotel and would have left her lunch with her. So I drove my suitcase down to her hotel, and I said, could I stay with you? Because I had to leave you. And then her place became a sanctuary, and many people who were suffering came to this place and were, you know, offering their choices to help them. And that had led to going out on the pier and helping people, you know, who had no families and had, you know, problems. And try to create some kind of stability for them so they could get to some family members or something like that. So in this course of time, I could see so many people suffering. And at the same time, I never for one moment was afraid. I never felt that there was a phenomenon that was happening. But I felt really inspired to read. You know, as a matter of fact, it made me want to go out and to travel and go to the Middle Eastern countries. And so I started to do that, going to Jordan, to Egypt, to places, just to show I'm not afraid, you know? Because I felt like it, you know, there's this protection. And then this is just a fallacy that we're imagining, you know, what's happening, that this destruction is taking place. But then we're going to build up this story that these people did this to us, so it's going to cause a conflict. You know? So I just wanted to go, you know, to visit the Middle Eastern countries, and so I did. And while I was there,
And what was the advantage? What was the benefit?
The benefit? To go to the Middle East? To establish some kind of connection with people, to see with my own eyes, to experience. Are they really these people? What people tell me, you know, these Muslim people are really, you know, dreaming of us and living. And also...
Did you meet with Bin Laden?
No, I was this peaceful, and I said, I'm Lady Liberty, and I would like to go to visit the King's House. So I went to the King of Jordan's house, and I said, I have these gifts for the King, you know. So they you know, welcomed me, and I came in, and I gave this gift, and then, you know, it was clear that they were most hospitable people, and I established so many wonderful relationships, and I continued to, you know, to travel and go to different places in Egypt, and especially in different countries. But I never really felt in the course of having that happen, except that for some time there was this terrible smell. You know, I kept blowing through the air in New York City of all these dead bodies. And that was really, you know,
Were the dead bodies there for many days?
Yeah, well, you know, it took a long time to get the dead
bodies. Oh, get them out, okay.
From the ground zero. They had to keep going and digging because, you know, all this Twin Tower collapsing.
Yeah. How many days it took to...
Well, it took weeks. And the firemen and all the people that dedicated their lives and some of them lost their lives for this particular experience. But in the course of all this happening, it brought so many people...
Okay, let's go back to the basics. Yeah. What kind of suffering, which category of suffering is this?
To me, that was like the suffering of others and also the humanity.
No, what category? There are three categories of suffering. Suffering caused by body and mind, suffering inflicted by others, and suffering caused by natural calamity.
The first two.
Not two.
Natural calamity, that was,
this is the second category of suffering.
Second.
The suffering caused by others.
By what?
By others.
By others. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you think that even if it was caused by others, that people were creating in their mind more suffering because maybe they misinterpreted?
Yeah, that is, well, yeah, well, you can say that. You can say that. Like, you know, the point is this world is full of suffering. Right? Nobody can escape suffering. Can anybody? Like, although you are saying, that you went to Egypt, you went to Middle East, and you went to... But could you alleviate your own suffering and other suffering by doing that?
I felt...
Not you felt, but the question is whether you did.
Was I able to alleviate suffering? No.
That's the reality.
No.
Like, no matter how much you try, we won't succeed unless and until we surrender to Krishna.
Yeah.
Because the sufferings are caused by our separation from Krishna. Therefore, the only way to alleviate the suffering is by being connected to Krishna.
So that's what I was thinking is that, considering sitting here now, in this time and surrendering to Krishna and looking back at that, and what I saw then, what I see now, is so completely different.
Yes, right. Yeah, now you're wiser.
And I couldn't, I don't even know how I could deserve, you know, that I could be seeing that. Because I could still be there thinking that the way I went on that journey, thinking I can maybe do something, but
so,
what am I really doing?
Yeah. So then again, you know, it's the devotees who created this good fortune for you. The devotees have created this good fortune. Isn't it? Devotees of Krishna, devotees of Islam. That's why, that's what I was addressing about Josh's point also. Like, what is the first consideration that creates this good fortune? Devotees. So now that you have become a devotee, now you create good fortune for others. So this is how Krishna consciousness or mercy of Krishna will spread.
So I was just wondering, is it possible to do something in the Middle East? I mean, because now that the relationships are...
Let the charity begin at home.
Well, I don't necessarily mean that.
There are plenty of suffering souls in New York City. So we don't have to, you see, the point is we don't have to go somewhere to be in some situation to help people. You will find suffering people, people are suffering everywhere. So you can help them wherever you are.
Even in Asia, there were people who were suffering coming from Sudan. And so, the second or third time I went to Egypt, I was able to go into Shabbat. And I was not really, I had just so little.
You see, we cannot avoid suffering by going anywhere. And in order to alleviate suffering, we don't have to go anywhere.
That's very true.
I mean, wherever we are, we can. We can, like, you know, our suffering will come no matter wherever we are. What is burning, Krishna?
Yeah, cooking.
Oh, they're cooking. I see. That's it's a cooking smell. Oh, I see. I thought it was something burning. I hope they're not burning. Yes.
I thought that this thing, people who are so receptive, you know, that they would be very, very receptive. And that was the reason that I mentioned.
Did you ask them to chant Hare Krishna?
Well, I asked them, yes. Actually,
at that time, you didn't know Hare Krishna.
I didn't know that.
So?
Because all I really knew.
Receptive to what, you know? They're receptive to sense gratification. The real receptivity of Krishna consciousness. For sense gratification, you'll find that everyone is receptive. Right? But what is actually the real thing that they should be receptive to is Krishna consciousness, accepting Krishna. Like, what is the degree of their acceptance? They will say, well, we are surrendered to Allah. Who is Allah? Do they know? So if they do not know who Allah is, how can they be surrender to Him? So these are the, you know, the subtle intricacies of these situations.
So facing the reality and accepting suffering, but also realizing that surrendering to Krishna,
it will depend, you know, like, I mean, since you mentioned about Twin Tower, 9/11, can you imagine being in Twin Tower at that time? Can you say that, well, everything is hunky-dory? No. I mean, that time, you know, when you are in that situation, you know, that is the reality. and suffering comes, you know. Like, we may create a very romantic situation, but that romantic concept is not going to last for long. The reality is reality. When a person is suffering from cancer, you know, I mean, he or she is suffering.
Mm.
You can't, you know, you can't romanticize that, you know. But that's what I was saying. But if he is situated in his Krishna consciousness, then his situation will be different.
It's just such a different way of looking at things than the different first one, or different position, perspective.
Like what?
Because you look at life differently, you know, when you surrender.
There's only way. There's no way to differently. We have to look at it. The reality is only one reality. The degree of suffering may be different, or our illusion may be different. I may be illusioned to think that, well, everything is all right. My house is burning, and if I am just lying in my bed and having a dream, that I am, you know, in paradise. But the thing is, the reality will hit me, you know, when the flame will touch my body. I'll wake up, and then I'll face the reality. I am in the middle of a burning house. My dream is not going to help me from that situation. The reality is reality. The material nature is like a forest fire. We didn't go out to light the fire. It is ablaze, and we are inside it. So what to do? That's what we have to deal with.
Well, when I mentioned about going over there again to do something, I would never go there to do something other than, because I actually had the tours, and I would bring people to go there. So, if I did something, it would have to be something, you know, with Krishna consciousness.
You know, that situation is different. At that time, you are not Krishna conscious.
That's right.
Right. At that time, you know, at that time, you are looking at the world in a romantic way.
That's right.
Right. That's the point I'm making.
It's like the Vedas, the sweet words of the Vedas, you know? Or something
flower.
Like that. The flower words of the Vedas. Right? And then, you completely see things just the way they are. So it's amazing how you can change, and you can see things and accept anything and deal with it, you know.
Mm.
Because some things can be very devastating, and you could just have a reaction just by thinking about them. You know, when people are like that.
Krishna Priya, you wanted to say something?
I was hearing what she was saying, and I was thinking how, so, you know, often we can think, well, I'm going to positive thinking my way out of this, but we think by the example of devotees that have really been successful in leaving their body, and that, like you're saying, the real positiveness is when they learn to take shelter of the holy name. And recently, this one beautiful devotee, Shama Kriya, she was first initiated by Prabhupada and Prabhupada and Ananda Maharaj. We knew each other many years ago. And she was just always very humbly absorbed in wanting to help other people in Krishna consciousness. She did the prison ministry. For many, many years, she sent books to all the prisoners.
Mm.
She was always thinking about helping others. And then out of nowhere, she got this pancreatic cancer. And she had a young daughter. And so she was older, but she had this younger daughter. So, you know, she went through all the chemo, this and that. And I saw her in November, and, you know, she was out there having a table for the prison ministry. And all of a sudden, I just got this message that she was in hospice. And it just came really, really quick. So the devotee said that it was just amazing, because everything, you know, she just said, like, everything else just fell away. And everyone who came, she was just feeling so much love for them and so much caring. And she was such a staunch person. Like, they wanted to give her different medications, and she was like, I don't take any medication. She goes, I just want to be conscious. You know, I want to be conscious of Krishna up until the end. So, you know, here her body was just in this incredible situation, but she had been so fixed, you know, for so many years on just humbly trying to give people Prabhupada's books, trying to give them the message of Krishna consciousness, that devotees were coming to her. And when normally when there's some stopping like that or someone leaving, you know, the atmosphere is like so heavy, but everyone who went to her, they were like, you've made it. You know, you're on your way home. You know, they were going and taking, you know, darshan of her. And then I heard that at her funeral and memorial, of course, and everybody was just glorifying and glorifying all the activities she had done. And of course, they were feeling so much separation that she had left. But the whole atmosphere was just surcharged. And she was just, you know, just a simple devotee, and she just accepted, you know, what Krishna was sending, and up to the end, just praying to Krishna, let me learn the lessons, and like that verse that, you know.
Now, has there been any such incidents in the entire medical history of, you know, American,
yeah,
you know, medical scene? Like, this is the thing, like, how could she behave the way she was behaving at that time? At that time, you can't fake it.
She was smiling. Everyone who came, they said, I felt so bad with Krishna, they said,
I learned something wonderful from you. I'm not going to take medicine because we don't take intoxication. We don't take intoxicants. Next time I tell my doctor that. They just insist on, you know, like, giving you medicine.